Money FM 89.3, the best of prime time.
Now, news organizations all over the world are trying to do a better job connecting with their audiences, i.e. you, in hopes of overcoming the profession's credibility problems and also in terms of ensuring their survival.
And to do this, a growing number of newsrooms have, well, for many years now, decades in fact, embraced what's called audience engagement. We do talk to you and ask you for your thoughts.
Yeah, all the time, actually, on this show especially. Now, at its best, engagement shows that audiences are real people to journalists and vice versa. It also offers people an opportunity to contribute their ideas about how their communities should be covered, allowing news consumers, of course, a larger role in terms of shaping their own stories. Yet sometimes this leaves journalists feeling worse about their readers than they did before. I think we've all been in this position, yeah, Tim?
Yes, we have.
Those of us who work here anyway. Well, Grace Ho, who's opinion editor at The Straits Times, actually wrote a piece about this recently, and she joins us today to tell us more. Hi, Grace. Thanks for joining us today on Primetime.
Hello.
So, Grace, first of all, what made you want to write this piece? What happened? What was the last straw?
Oh, there wasn't one straw. I think it was many straws, but it's a mixed bag of straws, to be honest. Well, there's the Facebook bag, for example. The Facebook comments section, which is just a lot of trolling. And you can tell from the comments that sometimes people haven't actually read the article. I've also had people yell at me on the phone, or a few who email me every day and over the weekend as well, disagreeing with everything I write. Then there are others who screenshot, you know, your social media pages and they kind of cut it up and circulate it with their own comments so that it looks as if, you know, the journalist didn't consider a particular perspective. But there have been good experiences as well, and I try to dwell on that. So there are some fun ones. Recently, I wrote a piece on PSLE exams, and I posted a math problem sum. I had a flood of emails from people asking me if the correct answer was 20 minutes, which it is.
Okay. The thing is, I can relate to this, and I was telling Tim this as well a few days ago. A few years ago, I wrote an opinion piece about Singapore hawkers and how when costs go up for them, consumers should be willing to pay more, but within reason, of course. Well, several readers told me to go back to India. Others unleashed a plethora of racist remarks, but I wanted to say hello. Firstly, I was born in Singapore and I was bred here. And secondly, if you disagree with me, fine, but do you have to get personal? So is this really a commentary about that larger narrative, that larger discourse that people are having about how to disagree agreeably?
Oh, absolutely. But I think, you know, whenever you have your email out there in public, people tend to project very intensely on that person, you know, all their likes and dislikes, loves and hates, you know, things that they're not happy about, you know, the government, the country, Singapore, the rest of the world.
But it does reflect on the person, on the troll or whoever it is who doesn't agree with you, coming up with all these personal attacks, making it personal because they are the ones who are not happy with their own situation and has really nothing to do with us. Don't you think?
That's a good way to console yourself. What do you think, Grace?
That's what I tell myself. It reflects badly on the person if you tell me to go back to my country. I've only had one incident similar to yours. Nothing in particular, probably just seeing my face on TV night after night, and this person just wrote a nasty handwritten note to tell me to go back to my own country. And this happened during that time in the middle of 2000s when there was a lot of hate going on about foreign workers in Singapore.
A lot of xenophobia.
Remember that time? Yeah, but I laughed at it. That's all I did, and showed it to my boss, like, just evidence A, just in case something happened.
That's one way of coping, huh? That's one way of coping.
I feel a lot more comforted now because I've had the same thing being told to me.
We are all going to go back to our own country, never mind that many of us are born here.
Exactly. But is this just a case of us holding a grudge, indulging in victimhood? I mean, maybe other journalists can relate and would care, but why should the general public care, Grace?
I think, well, there's a possibility that some of these negative, you know, responses actually lead to something far worse. And so I think people need to kind of bear that in mind before they talk or they yell at someone, you know, or they click send on the email. Particularly, I think, for women journalists, and I don't really want to single out, you know, this particular category, but there does seem to be an undercurrent of misogyny in some cases. So what I've found is that comments that readers make about women journalists are not comments that they always make about male journalists. Mm. So, you know, you have people randomly commenting on my byline photo saying, oh, you look a little bit young, or you look pretty, or you look ugly, and it has nothing to do with the work. Or if I write about children, or about husbands taking time off to coach them, you do actually get emails saying, oh, you forced your husband to do it, you shouldn't make a guy do it. And I'm not sure where the women readers are sometimes, or what they're doing, because it's usually the men.
Then it makes you wonder, right, why is it that most trolls tend to be male? Or is that really the case?
And I've no idea.
I think there is such a thing as grumpy old men.
Yeah.
And they are really, like what I said, they're unhappy about their own situation. It has nothing to do with you or their target. But how do you cope with it, Grace? Like, with all the things that you've received, and I'm sure you're coping well, but at some point, it's great that you are bringing this up, because we do have to talk about this. We're all affected. I cope in my own way by showing my own vulnerabilities on my own social media. I'm not perfect. I make mistakes and I laugh at it. But how do you cope?
I've actually gone off Facebook, to be honest. So all my sort of like comments, you know, when I comment on my own articles, I post it on LinkedIn, where I feel like I can curate my experience a little bit better.
Okay.
And you can kind of control, I mean, in a sense, the number of exchanges you have with people that are, you know, if it's unproductive, you know, you start to block people.
Yeah.
Emails, it's easy if you know that there's someone who's emailing you very often and it's abusive, then I usually block and it goes straight to spam.
The people on LinkedIn tend to be a little more professional when expressing their views. I mean, like I said, it's okay to disagree. It's about how you disagree. And this has, I think, a lot to do with media literacy among audiences as well. But there'll always be trolls who will do this no matter what, even when they know that cyberbullying is a crime, harassment is a crime, making death threats is a crime, which has happened to me as well.
See what they're doing as something wrong in their own perspective. They're just expressing what they really feel, but they don't know that they are hurting somebody else.
Well, I think they mean to. I think they mean to hurt someone else.
I don't know.
But the larger issue here also is of whether or not there's enough institutional guidance when it comes to audience engagement. You have a view on this, I know, Grace.
I think to a certain extent, but with certain caveats. So the newsrooms do give basic training on which platforms are suitable for what purposes.
Okay.
But there's no one sitting on your shoulder saying you can or cannot do this. Right? So that gives the journalists flexibility to decide what they're comfortable with. But it also means at the same time that the space remains quite grey. And those who dip their toes into the pond aren't really taught to deal with the fallout. Part of it, I think, is due to a long-standing journalistic culture where people take pride in being tough. So supervisors will tell you, oh, don't take it personally, grow a thicker skin. But it's the year 2022, so it may not be enough to tell people to grow a thicker skin, because especially for some of the younger journalists, they think, well, there are many other jobs where I don't have to get flamed every day. I have alternatives.
But maybe it is that thicker skin from my generation of journalism anyway. That's exactly what we were told. Don't bother with all these. Don't engage with them if you don't want to, because the more you engage with them, the angrier they will get. And then you get yourself into a bigger trouble by doing so. So maybe this is supposed to be the way to do it. There is no other way. We cannot control what the public wants to tell us, but we can control how we react to it.
Yeah, I think I'm slowly coming around to that. I need a bit more time.
Here's the thing. You mentioned also the risk of self-censorship. And that's something that I've seen myself do over the years, because I don't want to deal with this sort of thing. But then again, if you censor yourself, you'll never really make any sort of impact. You still want that audience engagement, don't you? So this is something I know newsrooms around the world are grappling with. Audience engagement is important. It does fuel financial revenue as well. How to navigate that environment?
Yeah, I think it's a very difficult balance to strike. I do think that if you engage people and they feel engaged, then journalism enjoys more loyalty, right? Which means that people perhaps are more willing to pay to consume the news because it's relevant and interesting to them. But I also think that there are many things which are outside the control of media organizations. I know this is a slightly oversimplified example, but, you know, for example, someone might just want to watch Netflix at night and not read the news. Or people are limited time and money. So, for example, I subscribe to a few Substack writers because I find them interesting, but that means that I may not have a budget for something else. Or people might just find news depressing and so they'd rather go for a walk. So does it mean that the news should not be critical and just happy and uplifting all the time? Not really, because there is a public duty to communicate some of the challenges that our societies face. And I think one last point on this issue is that we can't address the issue of financial financial revenue without tackling the elephant in the room, which is media's relationship with large corporates and aggregators like Meta and Google. So in Australia, there's a law that pushed Google and Meta to pay for the news that they distribute, and that's apparently injected about $140 million into Australian journalism each year. So there are these larger structural forces which we need to pay attention to.
So Grace, bottom line, what can we do as journalists, as people, to rise above all of this and be the bigger person or be the bigger organization?
I think as journalists, we try to listen with humility and we need to aim for a greater diversity of views and voices. Certainly, there have been blind spots in the media when it comes to, you know, people who don't look like us or speak like us or like the same things as us. And there has to be a more deliberate attempt to give voice to marginalized groups. We should also improve the accessibility and quality and trustworthiness of our work. But at the same time, I think we have to realistically appraise what can be done to return media to financial stability. It's not just about being attuned to audiences' desires, but also transforming media's relationship with search engines, advertisers, big tech, and funding agencies. And at a personal level, well, we just have to accept, you know, the brickbats with the bouquets and just shore up our personal sense of purpose and take genuine joy in one's work.
How can audiences be encouraged to be more gracious, though?
That requires education. You know, I don't have an easy answer here, so I'm just going to go with that. Yeah, let's educate people.
This is the thing, though, because the media has for decades, and I'm not just saying here in Singapore, but around the world, we have been appealing to the audience's emotional aspect of their personalities. So now it kind of did this to them as well. They respond to whatever we do or write about in an emotional way instead of an intellectual way. And that's where all these comments are coming from, I think.
It's possible to be emotional yet polite, or, you know, a little more considered in terms of how you respond, right?
Yeah, I think it's possible, but it's tough. Yeah.
But some people just do not have that capacity. I think when it comes to their emotion, they let it all out and it's difficult for them.
I think just as journalists like Grace, who mentioned humility, are trying to exercise humility in their writing, perhaps audiences should also be doing a little bit of that.
A little bit of emotional detachment goes a long way.
Yeah, or a little bit of empathy, why not? You know, at the other end of the spectrum. So Grace, what are your parting words to our listeners who no doubt might have engaged with you at some point or another?
Well, if you really feel strongly about it, let's meet over coffee. You know, let's have a talk, right?
Wow. Be careful, Grace.
You're brave.
I feel like, you know, some of the things that are said online, you know, if people actually meet you, they wouldn't say it to your face.
Exactly.
I think so. Yeah, that is true. It is because you don't see them. We don't know who they are. And that's why they're braver online.
Yeah, hiding under that cloak of anonymity, that's never good. And you know what? It's not just journalists who are facing all of this. Your children might be facing trolls as well on a daily basis. So if you think this was a conversation just about journalists and their pains, you are wrong. I think we should also look at this as a wider issue of how we conduct ourselves online, how we disagree with people, and how we express ourselves when we do. Thanks very much, Grace. Grace Ho, opinion editor at The Straits Times. Thanks for joining us on Primetime.
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.